Namotassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namotassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namotassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sangham Namassami. So, knowing the danger of distraction, how much renunciation do we want to do not to be distracted? Look at the good that can come from non-distraction. So you set an intention for the sake of non-distraction. The result is good. Is there a way to actually turn off the thinking mind? So much easier said than done. But if we have enough faith, if we have enough confidence, have you ever noticed the relationship between the level of confidence in your heart and your ability to open something that isn't opening? Like if you think you can't open it, it won't open. But if you think you can open it, somehow it opens. And that's true on this path as well. Many of us have an attitude that Nibbana is not possible in this life. But I can do dana and I can go on retreats and I can do some amount of practice, but I may never get to Nibbana. If we could just make the adhitana, the determination that yes, I can, and then take all the necessary steps that lead in that direction, which lead us away from distraction. But the confidence has to be there. If we believe in our ability to do something, it's possible for us to do it. If we have a situation in our home, in a relationship, at work, in relationships. Usually, relationships we believe will bring happiness. They also bring suffering. We all know that. But the truth of the matter is that healing has to happen in relationship. The healing doesn't happen just by abandoning or by giving up on relationship. But what really needs to change is not the relationship. People believe that the answer to social ills is adapting or adopting a different form of government will bring some dramatic and far-reaching changes in society. But really, change has to happen from within individuals. If we ourselves don't change, our government cannot change. We tend to be complacent and go towards the path of least resistance. And the current of samsara, the current of worldly activity and worldly aims and values will carry us away. If we don't resist it, if we don't set up determinations in our mind and resolutions in our mind, we will just go in the direction of distractedness and restlessness and selfishness. And sometimes we will break precepts to do that because we've not been training ourselves. So to train the mind, we have to have the confidence that we can train it. We have to believe that we are capable of freeing our minds from delusion. If we resolve the discord, within our own hearts. So we have compassion for ourselves and for other beings. To know, to understand what is possible, and to have the confidence, to have the faith that we can do this, to have the energy to make resolutions and determinations that will direct our mental energy. It's not going to happen by itself. It's not going to happen by electing better representatives in the government. Oh, that's not going to take away my greed, my hatred, my delusion. We need an acute and astute level of mindfulness. Mindfulness can be a rather sedentary and secular practice. It's become very mainstream. Even large companies have workshops for their employees to teach them how to be mindful, but they do it so that they'll get better results from their employees, so that their profit margins will increase. There are quite calculated reasons for teaching mindfulness to their employees. So it may not be right mindfulness. Mindfulness doesn't stand alone. It doesn't stand on its own. It really needs to be combined with wisdom, with diligence, which is a particular effort, an effort that's continuous, directed, alert, and earnest. It's kind of a chanda, like an aspiration that's deep and uplifted. It has a quality to it. It's not just, oh yeah, I better do this because this is my job, or I'll be punished, or I won't get promoted. When we work spiritually, we don't work out of those kinds of motivations. We work because we want to fulfill the highest within us. We don't want to be sullied by the world. And we want that which will bring us the highest fruit. And the Buddha did teach that if we do this work, we will realize the fruits of it. So, with everything that we do, mindfulness must be present in the mind in order for it to contribute to our rising up on the path, our development, our ability to cultivate. I remember many years ago, I was working for the United Nations in Nepal, and I had colleagues that I worked with who were ambitious and were eager to have me out. I was doing a good job and I was conscientious, and I was obviously too conscientious for some tastes. What I learned later was that the woman that really was trying to move me along was herself not being conscientious and ended up getting caught. And my teacher at that time was Sayadaw Unyanepunika, and he's now almost 80. Don't we hold our own life history as if the people we know are the same age as they were when we met them? Anyway, I went to him and I said, Sayadaw, these people, they're so unethical. You know, they're accusing me of things, but I know they're not doing things right. And he said, oh, you should practice metta. So I thought, okay, teach me. And he taught me the metta practice. So I was sending metta to this colleague and wishing that she would be nice to me. And I really did it with all my effort and all my mindfulness and great confidence, because Sayadaw told me this will work and I trusted him. And then after a few weeks, she just carried on. I got hauled up in front of the powers that be, and they tried to accuse me of things that didn't even involve me. And while investigating me, they discovered her signature on a paper that was supposed to indict me. That's just the way is the truth. You cannot hide the truth. But she still was very nasty to me. It was painful. And I went back to Saito and reported to him. He wanted to know, how's your practice? I said, it doesn't work. He said, well, tell me what you're doing. And I said, well, I've got this person at work who's like my enemy, but I just want to be friendly. And she's getting me into all kinds of trouble, and I just keep sending metta. And she continues to behave in a very nasty way. And she also tells other people bad things, and then they don't like me either. And he laughed. He said, that's not how you do the metta practice. You're not doing metta so that people will be nice to you. The reason you're doing metta is to purify your mind and to produce and cultivate a beautiful energy in your heart, which you can spread in all directions, even to people who don't like you. But it doesn't mean that they're going to change, but it means you will change. It means that whatever hostility is directed towards you, you will not pick it up with hostility. You will pick it up with forgiveness, with loving kindness, and with compassion. These people are ignorant, they are deluded, and they don't know how to properly behave, literally. And they're creating ill consequences for themselves, as well as spreading unwelcome, unfriendly energy all around them. So yes, it is difficult to love such people, but one must never hate another being. One may not approve of their actions. And just to be very clear, to separate those. So just as she was trying to use me for distraction, I was using the metta practice in a very distracted way. And I was getting off the track, off the real practice of opening the heart to the conditioned world and being equanimous with it. So metta is the very first step in that direction. We want evenness, we want tranquility, we want peace, but we can't expect it to come from outside. If we want other people to love us, that may never happen. But it doesn't matter, because we can learn to love unconditionally. We can learn to have unconditional compassion. We can learn to rejoice for the success of other people. So what he was trying to teach me was exactly that. What's important is what's the state of your heart, not what's the state of other people's hearts. So whatever we're holding within the mind, we have to look at, is it beneficial or not? And what is the result of it? What are we doing as a result of it? What's happening to us? So right away, by examining the benefits, we can see what we need to do if the benefit is not there, if it's harming us. And I began to see, I remember sitting in the hall in his temple after having that talk with him and just shaking my head and thinking how deluded I've been, how unaware I've been of what this Dhamma practice means. It wasn't just a reflection about metta practice, but about all aspects of meditation, and even about the precepts. We think that it's enough for us just to practice right speech and right action and definitely right thought, but there aren't really precepts about right thought, are there? But the meditation practice will not work if we don't practice right thinking, right thought, right intention. So we have to also examine how we practice right conduct and right speech, like behaving nicely to others, being gentle, being harmless, being nonviolent. Are we doing it so that people will be nice to us? Or are we doing it because it's a purification of mind? It's the way leading out of delusion. It's the way leading out of ill will. Even if people were to take a sword and point it at us, any weapon, even if they were to abuse us verbally, the point is not to change others, but to change our way of seeing, our way of receiving what we're given, and to develop that kind of unconditional compassion, which is based on a deeper level of wisdom. The wisdom comes through practicing right mindfulness and moving away from distractedness. Well, right there, that means we have to be able to give up following craving. Because the restless mind, the distracted mind, is just following craving. And if we follow craving, we follow greed and hatred, and delusion is right behind them. So meditation is a way of coming into the room. You come into this room and you sit down to meditate. You come into the room of your heart and you sit down in it and you look. What is there in there? What is it? For example, in this room, you see a lot of stuff, flags and pictures and carpeting and furnishings, and the shrine is full of stuff. And really, in the heart of our meditation practice, and in the meditation practice of the heart, we really want to empty out everything. We don't want it to be full of stuff. Because if it's full of stuff, we won't have clarity. And as long as there's no clarity, we can't see properly. So first is to be able to see, renounce, take precepts, create boundaries, and by limiting where our energy goes, we give ourselves the ability to focus so deeply that we can cut through all the stuff, abandon all the stuff we've been clinging to that doesn't serve us, and see how to speak. It's like you have to relearn everything. We learn how to speak properly, how to behave properly, and even how to think properly. And metta, of course, is one of the types of thoughts. It's a type of mind state that has such a noble, uplifted intention in it. It can save us from a lot of distress. It may not take away our enemies, but even the Buddha had enemies. His cousin tried to kill him repeatedly, destroy him repeatedly. So who do we think we are not to have hostile forces in our lives? Even coming from people we thought were our close allies. But that's not important if we can pick it up as a spiritual teaching. How are we receiving this? We cannot change the world, but we can change our minds. That's the crux of the matter. Now, that's a big project. And we need to also have compassion for ourselves. We haven't learned how to do this for most of our lives. And we must offer ourselves a beautiful gift, and that is compassion. And with it, patience. And with it, a joyfulness, a playfulness. Like, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay if we can't get it perfect. That's how we learn. The mistakes that I made when I was a student in university, I always remembered those the best. You know, you take an exam and you got two things wrong, and then you do all you think about is the things you got wrong. You never forget those. You don't remember all the things you got right. So maybe it's time for us to try to be a little more generous in the way we think about ourselves. Right intention and right thought, which include loving kindness, compassion, gladness, and equanimity on an unconditional level. When we think towards others, we use those sublime abidings. but we must practice them on ourselves. Coming, looking here with that kind of unconditional metta, loving kindness, and underneath that, forgiveness, unconditional compassion, unconditional rejoicing. Look how much we were able to do. What did you do? You have nothing to show. There's no photos on your app, on your device. I did this and I did that, and oh, look at that. That's all just distraction. But you focused and you went to a deep place with others, going in that profound discovery of truth within you. And everybody else, what do they have to show for it? Some virtual images on a tiny piece of plastic, but you've got inscribed in your heart more faith, more energy, more mindfulness, more concentration, and more wisdom. That's treasure. So if we wake up to the treasure that we're uncovering within us and cultivating within us and offering to ourselves and others through our more skillful, more astute, more kind, more gentle, more beautiful activity in body, speech, and thought, it's a field of merit, it's a field of blessings. We should applaud ourselves, rejoice, be happy, just reflecting on our intention and our ability to be here. But then that's not the end of the work. It's a beginning. And we keep growing that. Those of you that knit know how hard it is to get the first row on the needle, and you keep doing stitch after stitch after stitch, and there's still just all you see is this big needle. But eventually it grows into something solid and something warm that you can wear. And it lasts a long time. So stitch by stitch, we just keep working, a little breath by breath, intention by intention, and doing it in a way with great care and great rejoicing in the ability to do this. And all these other problems in our life, they are like a field of practice to help us see how good is our knitting or our stitching, how good are we at it, how astute are we at this practice. And if it's not working that well, we just have to look into the mirror of our own minds and make some adjustments there. We have to open our hearts a little bit more and feel the greater compassion for the beings around us who, whatever they're doing, which is unwholesome in our direction, they will have to suffer the consequences of that. We won't. We think we will on a worldly level, but in terms of Dhamma, as long as we can receive their hostility with a heart of forgiveness and compassion, then we are creating the causes and conditions for freedom. Let us not make our minds into a prison. Enough. The key is here. It's not out there. Thank you for listening.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.